Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. George H.W. Bush will talk about his legacy on the program. And of course, it's the most significant things he's done and the things that you will not have heard even mentioned on the Fox News channel. So we'll talk about that and a couple quick observations. One about the conservative Christians who've been behind the legalized marijuana issue. Many are behind the legalized all drugs, crack cocaine, just everything, recreational drugs. And of course, the difference between alcohol and, say, marijuana is that you have to abuse alcohol to get drunk. The daily, nightly use of alcohol by hundreds of millions of people, a glass of wine with dinner, does not get you high. It doesn't get you drunk. The normal use of marijuana gets you high. And that's the difference between recreational drugs and alcohol. The one you have to abuse to lose proper control of your faculties. The other you just have to use to become a risk and to become grossly negligent of your own control over your mind. So Friday night, I drove my mom and two of our nieces to a play in Aurora at the Vintage Theater, one of the Denver suburbs, and they saw Mary Poppins there. They said it was great. They had tickets, and I didn't want my mom to drive that far at night, so I offered to drive them. So I dropped them off, and now I've got some time. So I think I'm going to go to a coffee shop and do work, get 3 hours of work done. It'd be awesome. But on the way, there was an ARC thrift store, so a secondhand store, and the proceeds benefit people with disabilities. So I stop in there, and I notice that, and this is going to sound racist to some, over the many years I've been on the air, 18 years, 5 days a week, almost no one has ever called me a racist. Of all the things they've called me, they've almost never done that because I love blacks and I love Jews and I love Hispanics and Asians. I love people from every race, ethnicity, and I enjoy them and I respect them and I value them as much as I value people of any ethnic, racial background. And we're all one race. We're all descended from Adam and Eve in the human race. So I'm there in the thrift store, and there's a number of white folks, and there are four black men and four black people. And I noticed, and then I also made the comparison when I went to Starbucks, and I realized this is a tiny anecdotal sample, but I know that it extrapolates out. Three of the men that I saw there, they were workers. This was early Friday night, 7 o'clock, and they obviously had just arrived together in a pickup truck. They were working hard all day, probably all week, and they went in there to buy some work clothes. And I noticed all three of them are high, and all three of them, their eyes couldn't be more bloodshot. And I felt so bad for them. And the fourth black guy was a worker, an employee of the ARC thrift store, ARC thrift store. And he was high. I mean, he's not only, his eyes were not only deeply bloodshot, he's high. So then I go down the road just a little bit, and suddenly the whole neighborhood, it's a much more upscale neighborhood. I go into a Starbucks, and it's packed with people. They're all white. And no one was high. I don't, of course, I know that white people get high and they die, and the opioid epidemic is a good portion of white people killing themselves with recreational drugs. And now that it's funny, it's fun, it's mainstream to decriminalize being high and recreational drugs, that doesn't stop at the unnatural boundary of marijuana. Young people getting high, people who are unhappy with their life's condition getting high, they will get high with marijuana or any other kind of drug that will destroy them. And so when I saw these men, my heart went out to them, and I had some anger toward the Christians who should know better, the conservatives, the Republicans, the libertarians. Libertarians are immoral conservatives. The Libertarian Party has always been officially pro-abortion, pro-suicide, pro-euthanasia, pro-recreational drugs, heroin, crack cocaine, marijuana, everything, anything, pro-prostitution, of course, pro-adultery, fornication, pornography, pro-homosexuality, and on and on. So libertarians are faux conservatives. They're fake conservatives. The only views they hold that are respectable are ones they've stolen from the scriptures, not knowingly. But and then beyond that, it's a humanist worldview. So that was one observation before we get to George H.W. Bush's legacy. And then Cheryl and I have been talking about the college fraud that is nationwide and even around much of the world. We're going to a graduation ceremony for a young man who's graduating one of the nation's most prestigious engineering schools in a couple weeks. We're so excited. We can't wait. And he told us about the last class he's taking. And it's a, well, basically, it's a social justice, identity politics, sensitivity class. So how's that to be an engineer? And that's only, of course, one segment of all the propaganda that a college student has to endure. Colleges and the college fraud is now mostly understood by Christians and conservatives that it is an enormous fraud. And increasingly and thankfully, internship is becoming the necessary alternative if you want to save your child, your grandchild, or the nation even. So colleges, universities, they're not there to produce architects. They're there to produce puppets. And there was a time during their rapid decline into the abyss when on a college campus, if you made an assertion from a Christian worldview perspective, students, faculty, they'd say, prove it. They'd say, what's your evidence? Today they say, what right do you have to say that? What right do you have to say that? So that's where we're at. And we urge families to reconsider if their lives are focused on the goal of their kids going to college. We urge families to reconsider that. If your son, your daughter wants to do something that cannot be done apart from a college degree, then it's a very unfortunate circumstance that your kid needs to go to college, and we feel bad for you, and we feel bad for him or her, but it might be a necessary evil. But certainly, if your son or your daughter, they're not determined to be a surgeon or, God forbid, an attorney, then why encourage them to go to college? I mean, what possible reason other than that you hate them, which you don't? But if you hated a young person, you would do everything you could to get them to go to college if you hated them. And that's it. You hated them and you had some opportunity to influence them about going to college. You would urge them to go to college. Even St. Augustine pointed this out 1,700 years ago. He said, my mother desperately wanted me to trust in Jesus Christ, desperately. And at the same time, she desperately wanted me to get an education. And how she could not know that every one of my instructors would tell me to reject Jesus Christ and to give me all the reasons why Christianity is not true. How my mother couldn't know that, I have no idea. And what a good point. And it's been that way for thousands of years. And today it's just becoming more overtly obvious because the left can no longer constrain their outright hatred toward any group that hasn't assimilated with them. So if it's men generally, they're all sexists. If it's white people generally, they're all racist. If it's straight people generally, they're all sexual perverts. If it's people who believe in freedom, they're all socialists and communists. If it's people who honor Jesus Christ, they're all agnostics or atheists or pagans. And so other than those who have identified with them, they have a seething hatred for everyone else. And if you encourage your child to go to college, you're just promoting this horrifically anti-Christian worldview, which eventually makes it criminal to be a Christian, makes it criminal to warn people about sexual immorality, makes it criminal to discipline the children that you're raising in your home, makes it criminal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So is it going to be harder for your kids and grandkids to be Christians because of our universities and college campuses? Sure it is. And again, like I started with, I'm not saying it's a sin to go to a college campus. And if you are pursuing a career where there's no other practical option, well, then you go to college, but everyone pities you. Everyone is not proud that you go to college. They pity you. They feel sorry for your parents. And the fact that you might survive it, but 1,000 other young people around you who go, 90% don't survive it. So that's all obvious. And that's why we need to encourage an increased return to internship. If you think about young people and how capable they are physically and mentally, and then you think of some discipline, like let's say being a surgeon. So when might somebody be at their peak in their career of being a surgeon? I'm not talking about earning power, but I'm talking about actually saving lives because of their incredible skill and response times, visual acuity, and their stamina, all this. Their ability to understand and comprehend situations. Of course, some of that improves with age. But if you look at, let's say, careers as diverse as physicists and NHL hockey players, look at that diversity of fields. Do they really only get great at what they do in their 30s, 40s, and 50s? No. Physicists, from Albert Einstein to Schrodinger to so many physicists, are known to produce their greatest work intellectually in their 20s and 30s. Now, there are plenty of times where older physicists have done amazing work, but it is so incredibly common for young physicists to produce their greatest discoveries. And then you think about the NHL and the hand-eye coordination and the ability to think incredibly quickly and respond. And so it very well could be, if we're not thinking about, well, how much money is somebody going to make over their lifetime and eliminate competition so they can make more money, if we're not thinking about that, but we're thinking about someone, a young man or a woman inclined toward the healthcare industry, and they think they might even want to be a surgeon. And so they're 15 years old. They've already spent about 10 years being educated. How much basic education do you need? And so they become an intern at a local surgery clinic or even a hospital. And starting in the first week or so, they're observing operations. And after a few months, they're actually helping, providing implements to the surgeon or to the nurses, setting up, taking down. And it could be a simple surgery like removing an appendix. It could be by the time the kid is 16, 17, 18, he's doing his first surgeries. And by the time he's 22, he could be saving more people than today because of our addiction to the destruction of the college system. He could have saved maybe 100 lives before today a med student even graduates. And so we need to return to internship and do everything we can as individuals to promote that concept. Everything we can possibly do to discourage people from going to college. You know, unless it's a college that honors God, but even then, it'll only be for a short time because Jesus said you can't put new wine in old wineskins. And very quickly, within a few generations, a college that is founded to honor Christ soon enough is Antichrist and is promoting child killing and homosexuality and socialism and atheism and so on, and persecuting the very Christians that the college was originally set up to edify. So now, after discussing the Christians who tragically advocate decriminalizing, legitimizing recreational drugs, including marijuana. By the way, you might want to look at our webpage, kgov.com/pot. If you know anyone who supports the use of marijuana, just send them a text with kgov.com/pot. That's it. kgov.com/pot. And it could change their lives if they're willing, and it could save a lot of people a lifetime of grief and point people to Jesus Christ, whether they're Christians or not. Okay, so drugs and the college fraud and the Christians' renewed attention on promoting internships. Okay, so now George H.W. Bush. This Sunday at Denver Bible Church, we did the sermon, What Will Your Legacy Be? And we talked about our own legacies and what will they be in Jesus Christ. You know, your legacy is what have you left to other people upon your death? Upon your death, what have you left to other people? That's your legacy. And we are the legacy of Jesus Christ. We are, because upon his death, he paid for our sin. Then by his resurrection, of course, we are saved when we trust in him. But in a real way, we are his legacy. We are those who benefit incredibly from his death. So then we thought about the legacy of George H.W. Bush. In fact, the whole Bush family. I interviewed a professor, political science professor from Grove City College a few years back. He wrote the book, God and George W. Bush. I think that was a bestseller, Professor Paul Kengor. He also wrote God and Ronald Reagan. And we discussed the conversion of the son, and that gave us insight about the father. And then there were all these secret recordings that were made by a Doug Weed. He was a longtime confidant of the Bush family. He secretly taped a number of phone conversations over a period of a couple years with George W. Bush. And it really was shocking. In fact, if you go to our website, kgov.com, K and then like government, gov.com/Kengor, K-E-N-G-O-R, you could learn all about the secret tapes of George W. Bush with Doug Weed when Doug Weed is teaching Bush how to talk to evangelical Christians to get their votes, first for his father and then for himself. And George W. Bush actually says, "Why? Well, I know there are code words I've got to say. I know I have to say I've accepted Christ into my life." And he said, "Well, of course. Of course, that's true." You know, he doesn't want Doug Weed to think he's just an outright liar. But when his father, George H.W. Bush, was going for the Republican nomination, he met with evangelical leaders, and he wanted their support. And so, to the credit of one of them asked him, now, somebody asked Donald Trump, have you repented? And his answer was, of what? What would I ever need to repent of? Well, aside from treating women like dirt and cheating on your wives, and there's a lot we all have to repent of, and the fact that our sin brought Jesus Christ to the cross. There's a lot we need to repent of. But George H.W. Bush was asked by one of the Protestant leaders, if you were to die tonight, where would you spend eternity? Would you go to heaven or hell if you were to die tonight? What a great question. And George H.W. Bush answered, well, I like to think that I'm a good person. And I certainly believe that my good works outweigh my bad. So I sure think that I'd be in heaven. And so, that was the wrong answer. That means that Jesus Christ died for nothing. Because if you could get to heaven just by having more good works than bad works, then why would Jesus have to die? In fact, even an earthly judge, if a man is convicted of murdering his wife, and they've got his fingerprint and her blood, they've got the whole thing. It's as certain as could be. He's guilty. He murdered his wife. And then he says to the judge, yeah, but I've done so many good things in my life. Look at all the good things I've done. Does that somehow erase the fact that you're a murderer? All the good things that were done by those in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago who stood before Pontius Pilate and shouted, crucify him, crucify him. Did all their good works somehow erase the fact that they were willing to kill the Messiah? God the Son, who had done nothing wrong, who had harmed them in no way, harmed no one in any way, and they wanted to kill him. And that's what sin leads everyone to. Eventually, everyone who does not repent, including Donald Trump, everyone who does not repent before God and trust in Jesus Christ, everyone, their sin will bring them to the place where they would destroy God if they could in order to vindicate themselves. They would destroy God if they could. And everything that is holy and wonderful and righteous, they would bring it all down to try to justify themselves. So George H.W. Bush gave the wrong answer, and he realized he had a political problem because he didn't get the rousing support from the Protestant leaders, the evangelical Protestant leaders, that he needed if he was going to carry the base of the Republican Party. So they had a meeting about it, and they decided that George W. Bush would be his liaison to the Protestants. So he would be the one to work to get their support for his father's presidential bid. So the first problem is that George W. Bush is not a born-again Christian. He's not an evangelical. His church is the United Methodist Church, which is the same denomination as Hillary Clinton. You know, the post-Christian, radically pro-abortion, pro-homosexual United Methodist Church. In Arvada, Colorado, the United Methodist pastor says that Jesus Christ did not rise from the dead. And that's not unusual among United Methodists. They think it's an embarrassing claim of the Bible. So George W. Bush needs to become a born-again Christian so he can win over votes for his father. So what do? They call Billy Graham. Billy Graham and George H.W. Bush died the same year, Billy Graham back in February. And even though Billy Graham's public sins were so egregious and the false sense of security he gave to people like Bill and Hillary Clinton, and any powerful person he had the opportunity to be with, giving them a false sense of security, telling them in front of others what godly people they are and how the world is so lucky to have them as leaders, when many of these people were outright evil and sliding into hell on a greased pole. And so Billy Graham not only gave this false sense of security to many powerful people who therefore never needed to repent before God because they already had the approval of his messenger, Billy Graham. So that was one mistake. But then his outright sin, for example, you can see this documented at ProLifeProfiles.com. ProLifeProfiles.com, just click on Billy Graham, and you'll see in tier four that he talked about the children who he believed could be aborted. It's fine to abort these kids. So tragic. And so George W. Bush becomes a Christian so that he could be the liaison to the evangelical leaders for his father. He always tried to keep his distance from evangelicals. He'd much rather hang out with the Clintons than with born-again Christians, if you hadn't noticed that. Much rather. But when he passed away, George H.W. Bush was compared to his own father, Prescott Bush. And that was a good comparison, although not for the reason you'll hear on the Fox News channel. Prescott Bush not only supported abortion, supported Planned Parenthood, he was the treasurer of the national Planned Parenthood organization, not of the Texas chapter or a local chapter. No, he was the president of the national Planned Parenthood. National. Over the ensuing decades, billions of dollars would go to Planned Parenthood, billions of tax dollars, your hard-earned money. And that's channeled through something called Title X funding. Title X funding, where did that come from? That came from George Herbert Walker Bush. That came from George H.W. Bush. He is the one who introduced and fought for the passage of Title X funding, which they had a euphemistic term for it. They called it family planning. Family planning, which actually Planned Parenthood used to kill tens of millions of innocent children. So when you think about George H.W. Bush, he became president. You know, the 12 years of Reagan Bush, during those 12 years, the homosexuals went from a fringe group to a central political powerhouse. And it was George H.W. Bush who was the first president to honor homosexuals, inviting them to the White House. Which today, of course, the homosexuals who would say, we just want to be left alone, the homosexuals are doing everything they can to have fired from a career, a Christian who believes that homosexuality is wrong, to sideline and make irrelevant and to silence someone who believes that Jesus Christ was right when he said that God made us male and female. That's hate speech. To the homosexuals who the Bush family put front and center, Jesus Christ is a hater and guilty of hate speech. Maybe that's why they don't like him so much. The Bush family, from Barbara Bush to Laura to the girls Jenna and Barbara, radically pro-abortion. George H.W. Bush, when you think about him nominating David Souter, radical leftist. Radical leftist. And pro-abort. People claim that, well, he did a good job with Clarence Thomas, except Clarence Thomas, you see, people like Jay Sekulow, they don't read well. Because they say, well, Clarence Thomas stood up for morality in the church, like in a ruling about Texas and homosexuality, when he dissented from the majority opinion that legalized homosexuality nationwide. And they, I guess, never took the time to read his one-page dissent, because in it, he basically said that people who think that homosexuality is wrong, there's something wrong with those people. But this isn't the right way to decriminalize homosexuality. We got to do it the right way. Same thing he believed about abortion. You got to do it the right way. Hey, we're out of time. But boy, the Bush legacy is horrifying. We find out on Judgment Day much more. In the meantime, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.